Influencers is brought to you by
7Seas. Start your day the right way. Soya Studios, located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road West. ACG Wholesale, with quality service and great prices. The Beauty Barn, hair and beauty supplies, delivering beauty products straight to your door. WhatsApp 242-812-8500. Real Time Sound Studios. And Global Transformation Media, transforming you from the inside out. Welcome to Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM, and I'm your host, Lady Shima. And on this radio show, we take you into the world of leaders within Bahamian society and the global community to give you insight on how they use their influence to bring about positive change. We provide this platform for influencers to inspire our listeners with their personal stories on how they maneuver and strategize to still be impactful and influential even in this new norm environment post-COVID-19. It is our hope that the stories and insight of the influences we bring to you will inspire you to use the power of your influence to bring transformational change to your immediate environment, Bahamian society, and for some, even across international divides. And today, we delve into the mind of a Bahamian parliamentarian who has distinguished himself as an inspirational figure, especially to that sector of our local demographic who fall under the category known as millennials. At the age of 22, he became the youngest elected member of parliament in the history of the Bahamas and the Caribbean community. He is the sitting member of parliament for the Bain and Grandstand constituency, and he currently serves as parliamentary secretary in the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism and Aviation. He also serves the darlings, the youth of this nation, as the founder of the Rising Star Organization, an elite male mentorship program designed to train, empower, and equip young male student leaders with the tools to become world changers. So today, influencer Travis Robinson sits with me as we discuss the topic, The Bahamas, a Nation in Recovery Mode. All this and more when we return here on Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM. Need your picture taken? Well, if you want it to look its best, then go to the best. It's Soya Studios, capturing your special events, portraits, passport, job, and visa photos. Plus, there's more. Also offering professional printing services of business cards, letterheads, signs, and banners. Opened Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a legacy. 28 years and growing. Located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road. Call 361-7786.
Staying healthy has taken on a whole new meaning these days. So we ask, why do you put your health first?
As a business professional, I need to make the most out of my work days.
I'm a teacher, and I want to be there for my students.
In sports, I have to be in top form for my team.
Motherhood, I just got to keep up with my kids.
Because my patients rely on me to be at my best.
Staying healthy is important for many of us, and Haliborange makes it easy. Just one 1,000 milligram tablet of vitamin C gives your immune system a flavorful boost, leaving you protected and feeling good for the day ahead. Haliborange Vitamin C. Just pop the cap, drop it in water, let it fizz, and enjoy. Part of the Haliborange family.
ACG Wholesale is the answer for retail grocery store owners and everyday shoppers who want to save big. ACG carries a variety of drinks, snacks, meat products, essential dry goods like rice and yellow grits, plus lots of wholesome produce. And ACG Wholesale is a proud distributor of Borden's Milk. Opened Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located next to Phoenix Supermarkets on East Street South. Call 392-1155. That's ACG Wholesale with quality service and great prices. Welcome back to Influencers. I'm your host, Lady Shima, and with me today is influencer, parliamentary secretary for the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism and Aviation, and of course, he also serves as the member of parliament for the Bain and Grandstand constituency. I speak of none other than Mr. Travis Robinson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you so very much, and I'm really excited about this conversation. Because there is a whole gamut of topics that I have here for us to discuss. And I'm really enthralled and excited about the fact that I get the opportunity to interview such a young parliamentarian. I think there's a lot of inspiration to be gleaned from your story. So with that said, let's start with the whole purpose of the show, and that is to use the power and inspiration of influence to really inspire those listeners to use the power of their influence to bring about positive change in their homes, in their communities, in our country. So with that said, let's take you a little bit of a ways back. You're chronologically still very young.
Yes.
But we're going to go back to your teenage years. Let's talk about those persons who have had, you know, a great sense of influence upon your life and the man, the young man that you've become today.
Well, growing up in Bainbridge Grahamstown, mm-hmm. I didn't really have a lot of local community influences that live within the community. Mm-hmm. However, in the school that I was that I attended, C.R. Mm-hmm. Walker and T.A. Thompson, mm-hmm. a matter of fact, in T.A. Thompson, my junior high school, my seventh grade homeroom teacher, Ms. Ayan Seymour Bean, who became my adopted mother,
okay.
Has had the most major influence on my life. Mm-hmm. C.R. Walker Senior High School, my geography teacher, Mr. Freddie Munnins.
Okay.
He would have had that male influence on my life that helped to rear me into the young man I am today.
Mm-hmm.
I participated in a number of youth organizations like the Boys Brigade and the Rangers program coming up in school. And the mentors in that, in those programs, like Captain Moxie and Captain Wellington Ramsey in the Boys Brigade, mm-hmm. They really steered me on what it is to be a young man of you know, power and influence and conviction. But overall, interestingly enough, my major influences yes. and mentors mm-hmm. have been laymen and common individuals in mm-hmm. society.
Mm-hmm. Like the ones that you just named, and a really outstanding yeah. influence upon your life, yes. And I'm believing that this has had an impact on you being the founder of the Rising Star Organization, an elite male mentorship program designed to train and to empower and to equip young male student leaders. Now, before we really even get into the troves of talking more in depth about what it is exactly that you do with this mentorship program, some of which, of course, is quite obvious, watching the news, you know, and this is often the topic of discussion, looking at the amount of young men, young Bahamian men being hauled before the courts. And a lot of times when we go behind the scenes and we get a backdrop of the story and we get a little bit more of an insight as to how they unfortunately ended up before the courts, it always tends to be brought right back to that starter point and place, and that is the father figure, that hole that needs to, that void that needs to be filled. I believe that there's a relationship between the two, and I'm talking about this mentorship program and what it is that I just mentioned. What are your thoughts?
Well, I fully agree. Mm-hmm. I often say to people a lot that the older generation that point their finger at my generation mm-hmm. often forget who raised the same generation. And so it is our, what we see today mm-hmm. is a direct result of the older generation's tutelage or the lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, you know, young men particularly, because I was with them, you know, mm-hmm. The young man you hear sitting here today speaking, I wasn't always well-groomed and poised as I present myself to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. I was a part of the Nike Boys gang in Bayonetown and running
what?
The strips and going down the Junkanoo and throwing bottles
wow.
and getting locked up. And I was into all of that,
wow.
you know, because I didn't have a quote-unquote strong father figure inside my life,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? But I didn't use that specifically as a reason why I couldn't become something greater in life.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, as I mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
my role model and mentor was a woman
mm-hmm.
that really raised me into
wow.
being the refined young man I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think a lot of young men are not just necessarily looking for a father figure.
Yes.
But really looking for an opportunity to express, you know, themselves personally in terms of what are their dreams, their aspirations, their goal. How do they see themselves fitting inside society?
Yes, that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
And for me, when I talk to young men on the blocks and on the streets in Baintown and elsewhere, they just want to be heard. They want to feel like they belong. And thus, you know, my mentorship, Rising Star Male Mentorship Organization, was really birthed out of a desire from me as a young student from Stephen Dilip Primary, wanting to go back to my school and give back of some of the things they have given to me. Mm-hmm. You know, my guidance counselor at Stephen Dilip Primary, Ryan Barnett.
Yes.
He was the one who really gave me that way out, you know, in terms of when I come to school in the morning, I wouldn't have lunch or anything. I got my lunch from the free lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wore a shirt that only had three buttons, big,
amazing.
You know, short, overgrown pants, you know, bleached out, bust up shoes. Uh-huh. But I still came anyway because I more often than coming for school, I came because I had someone I could have talked to.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my guidance counselor at the
time.
That's
good. Yes.
And so that passion and desire spurred me to create that organization where other young persons like me will have that same opportunity.
Mm-hmm. That's a really awesome testimony. And let's talk a little bit more specifically and in some detail of some of the work that you've done so far through your mentorship program historically.
Right. So the mentorship program was really designed, as it says, you know, equipping young leaders to become world changers.
Mm-hmm.
What I found growing up as a young boy in Stephen Dilip Primary and then T.A. Thompson when I went on to become the head boy there, and then C.R. Walker when I went on to become the head boy at that institution.
Outstanding.
Is that a lot of organization, particularly like when I was in the gang, et cetera, there were numerous organizations that catered to the quote-unquote at-risk young person.
Yes.
You know, you had the Youth Against Violence, you had the Shaw Program, you had Teen Challenge with Mr. Fox, and the list goes on.
Yes.
But then when I really looked at a program that catered for someone like me at the time in junior high school where I, you know, I was in the gang, but I'm now on this path of becoming an academic individual.
Mm-hmm.
The programs were not there, you know. And I often tell people, you know, not because a young boy is well educated means that he don't need the grooming and the organization to bring him up.
That's
as though the at-risk individual.
Yes.
So Rising Star was really birthed out of the belief that I had that young leaders in school. So my program really focused on the 2.9, the 3.0 and above students, because the goal is how do I give those individuals, those young boys who are already performing, and because they are performing, a lot of people think, well, oh, they don't need the attention, they don't need the help, they got it all together. And so some of the things, you know, we focus on, because they are so book smart, right, our program is not tailored around the academia of it. So we do the, you know,
dealing
community
with, like, the
outreach.
Yes.
So we do community service, painting the elderly people homes, grocery give backs. We go around, we clean up the beaches, et cetera. Those type of programs.
Empowerment.
Right. We partner with the Defend Force. They come in, they train them. I carry them through the rigorous, you know, because typically the book smart young boy is not really exposed to the grit and the grind. And so the program is really developed to give them grit and grind to, yes, you have the academic, but when you come on the streets of the Bahamas, you're going to need something else to push beyond just the academic.
Right.
And so that's what the program really focuses on, pulling them, not really pulling them away from the book, but complementing the book aspect of
the word, complementing
so that
it,
they are not just the bookworm, but they can function and move in any reality or society they found themselves in.
Yeah, and you know, a couple of minutes before we started with this conversation, you said, of course, due to the pandemic, you know, there's a little bit of a lull in the execution of this program. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts on the future of the program? Of course, this is so needed. And, yeah. And what did you say to me?
Well, absolutely. The program won't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. We will get back to the full-on operation of the program as soon as, you know, the country gets the numbers back under control and the school system education allows students to come back into the mm-hmm. the school building for face-to-face, because it's an after-school program and the type of principles and lesson we teach them are really face-to-face type of principles and morals that they need to learn. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I do work with the guidance counseling department.
Good. That's good.
In the meantime, until mm-hmm. we get back to that program. And I would come in and I would do guest lectures at different mm-hmm. schools for the young boys, et cetera.
That's awesome.
To talk about what the program is about and to mm-hmm. give various sessions on the program until we get back to that one-on-one intermingling with them.
That's really awesome, you know, because there are so many different ways and modes and, you know, having to pivot. And so many of us, we had to do that. And that's exactly what you did there with this awesome program. And I'm just praying and hoping that sooner than later, we can get beyond this pandemic.
Absolutely.
So that we can get back to some face-to-face with such an awesome program as that one. But with that said, of course, our topic for today is the Bahamas, a nation in recovery mode. And I want to talk to you more so in the Office of Parliamentary Secretary for the Bahamas, Ministry of Tourism and Aviation. But right before we get into that in detail, let's talk a little bit about your rise in politics. You have a very, very, very interesting story. You just shared a little bit about your personal background. And to be honest with you, it's the first time me hearing some of what you had to say. So I am extra inspired by your personal story today, Paul Sec, today. Yeah. But 22 years of age, the youngest in Bahamian history to be elected into the halls of parliament. Handedly defeated the PLP incumbent back in 2017, Dr. Bernard Nottage, who's 71 years of age at the time. And of course, the PLP having a strong hold in that area. Let's talk a bit about that victory. And I want to segue into talking just a little bit about 2022 as well. Do you believe that your victory had to do with your promises to the people of the Bain and Grantstown constituency? Or do you believe that it probably fell to the default of party politics? What was your honest opinion on that?
Well, I tell people often when I talk about my stance in Baintown and who I am, I'm not running for Baintown. Mm. I live in Bain and Grantstown.
Good point.
And so the difference is, you know, here's a young man that the community watched grew up from a little toddler, went to primary school, junior school, senior school, and into college, the university that is just 1 minute away from the university, from the Bain and Grantstown community.
Mm-hmm.
So being a part of programs that I mentioned earlier, like the Boys Brigade at Bethel Baptist Church on Meaton Street and the Rangers program at C.R. Walker and different organizations I was a part of, it really cemented me within the Bain and Grantstown community in terms of the community service that we did. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the elderly people knew me by name because of the community service we did with them.
Mm-hmm.
Regular people in society knew me from playing basketball on the park with their sons and their daughters, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just the Rising Star program, a goodly number of the kids in those programs are sons and sons of residents of Bain and Grantstown. So
okay.
They know the work that I have been doing even as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So to support me in that election was not more so who's this young man coming in trying to, you know, get my support. I had proven myself over the years, and so
mm-hmm.
the knock on the door, while it was not an easy one,
mm-hmm.
Was certainly a familiar one.
Mm-hmm.
Because as well, while I joined the FNM at the age of 20, well, when I joined the FNM and went into election,
mm-hmm.
my campaign actually started out as a 21-year-old independent candidate
mm-hmm.
for Bain and Grantstown.
Yes.
And so it was in my independent run that both the leadership of the FNM and the then Progressive Liberal Party invited me to have a sit-down conversation with them. Obviously, at the time, the PLP was not the most favorable in society in the 2017, going into 2017
that's
general
correct,
election.
At the time, yes.
And so I had agreed to meet with Dr. Minnis. And, you know, we sat down, we had a conversation, and he talked to me about his vision and his desire for the community. And I realized that it had lined up with my desires and dreams for my community that I, you know, still live in today. And thus my transition from independent and all of my team and everybody who was with me merging into the Free National Movement.
Okay.
So Minds has never been a political thrust. It was, it has always been a community activism.
Thrust? Okay.
Yes, always, you know. I worked with the Ministry of Youth, Sports and Culture, drafting youth policies, etc. And so young people in different places know me as well and the work that I really produce in terms of who I am and what I stand for and what I represent.
So listening to what you said just now, you sincerely believe that your win in 2017 has solely to do with the work that you would have done as an independent candidate in the Bannon-Grantstown constituency and nothing by default by way of party politics in 2017.
Right. So I wouldn't say it the victory was by default, because I think the victory margin was by almost 1,500 votes. Right. So let's say if I give 500 votes to the party political brand, that's still another 1,000 votes that has to be attached to something. And bear in mind, we're talking about a PLP black belt community.
Right? This is true.
So the party brand really didn't carry much leverage in such a community. Right. So that's why I say when I chalk up the 500 votes they're about to the party brand, there's still the bulk of that success of the victory that has to be attached to something. And I think that was the community work, the community activism, the authenticity, the relatability of myself to the people. And don't get me wrong, bear in mind, party affiliation does still have a strong hold
of course,
in our society today. But obviously, in certain communities, whether it be for the PLP or the FNM, whether it's the Centerville or Bayontown or Killarney and St. Anne's, they all have their black belt areas, right, where party brand is not the deciding factor.
Most definitely.
For either side, you know. So I think the work that we've put in, my team and I have put in, and the authenticity and the genuine spirit by which we have been doing what we're doing, has been the catapult or the catalyst to arrive to the result we have seen at that time.
Okay, I hear you and I understand you. But just on a point of clarity, I just want to say that when I say by default, as it relates to party politics, talking about when you would have such a landslide victory in a general election where you would have the majority of the electorate saying, listen, we are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so we don't care who they bring to us as long as it's on the red because we want to get the gold out. We're going to vote for them. Right.
But when you do other margins, for example, when you look at Glenys Hannah Martin in Anglesey, another PLP stronghold, right? Those areas, it was so close for her. I think she only won by about 80-something votes thereabout.
It was very close.
Right. This is a lady who won by the thousands, right?
An entrenched stronghold.
In a PLP area,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so we're talking about an individual who was the sitting cabinet minister, minister of national security, a juggernaut within the PLP establishment, etc. So when we look at the margin of victory, I say that even though that spirit of we don't care who was on the ballot was there, there was an extra oomph of excitement that cemented even more persons than not who would have ordinarily voted for the FNM just to get the PLP out at the time that went to the polls. And we are accounting for that extra ordinary result in the victory margin.
Okay. I've got your point loud and clear. And of course, I want to use that to segue right into talking about your relationship with the Prime Minister, the Right Honorable Hubert Minnis. Of course, your story, it's in public domain. Everybody knows what's happened. Of course, in July 20th, to be exact, you were reinstated as with your post, Parliamentary Secretary for the Ministry of Tourism and Aviation. And just being from the outside looking in, and now so more so on the inside as of recently, you're doing quite the phenomenal job. But you have had your seasons. You have had your times of ups and downs. I would like to ask you about the power of influence as it relates to your relationship with the PM, because there were some persons who said that you would never return because of why you were fired in the first place back in 2018. And of course, that had to do with the vote on the VAT going from 7.5 to 12%, and lots of talk amongst the electorate saying, listen, you never go against the big chair, because when you go against the big chair, you're out. And that's exactly what happened to you. But surprisingly for some and not surprisingly for others, there is this reinstatement to the chair of Parliamentary Secretary. What do you think led to this reinstatement? Were there private conversations, or do you think that there was just this time to really sit down and have an introspective look and to really take a deeper look at what really happened and maybe, you know, coming to a realization that a wrong decision was made? What would you say?
Well, I would only say that, you know, from the time of my termination in 2018, the Prime Minister and I, even prior to that, shared a very amicable relationship, one where we were are so close in our party that we are sometimes considered as father and son. And I say that because the relationship we share and the decisions we make are not from a standpoint of hatred or a desire to see the next person fall. My decision to vote against the value-added tax was solely that of my commitment to the people of Bain and Grahamstown, and a commitment to them that I would stand up and I would fight for them no matter the cost or no matter the outcome. And his decision to terminate me was not, not just myself, three others, because it was four of us.
Of course, yes.
Was not one of
Chipman,
a standpoint
Miller,
of, you know, hatred or animosity or any of that sort. Mm-hmm. He was doing his job as prescribed by the parliamentary, by the Westminster system, as were we as members of parliament doing our job and how exercising our right to support or not to support a bill in the parliament. And so, you know, today we still share a very cordial relationship. I think my reappointment had much to do with the reality that both of us had good intentions when we did what we did. I'm speaking in terms of myself and the Prime Minister. He had an obligation in his chair.
I understand, yes.
And I had an obligation to the people of Baintown.
So it was his obligation as the PM, according to the Westminster system, to fire you because you came against the majority, because you came against all, more specifically, what it is that he had intended, that right. We're going from the 7.5 to the 12.
Right. So in the Westminster system, a parliamentary secretary, like a minister, is bound by parliamentary rule to support the government's decision.
Mm-hmm. So you serve at the PM's pleasure.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Right. So whatever the government decision is, which was to increase value added tax, in my position. Now, had I been a regular member of parliament, I could have segued and voted no with no type of, you know, backlash. But the appointment I held me also to these, in my view, antiquated laws that has not served our country very well over the many years.
You call them archaic.
Archaic, you know. And so I was not one as a young individual to come and to simply acquiesce to a system that I don't believe in to begin with. And so for me, It was to stand up and speak out for the people who elected me to serve and to say no to a system that does not serve the Bahamian people well.
Mm-hmm. When you say in a system that you don't believe in to begin with, you were referring to the Westminster system.
I'm referring to the Westminster system, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got that. Let's talk a little bit about 2022 because we're going to use the last half hour to talk specifically about tourism. So let's just continue to flow with this conversation. There was something that was said that really caught my eye in my reading and prepping for this particular show. It was the opinion and some words that were said outright by opposition Senator Fred Mitchell. And I'm going to quote from a news report that's from July 2020 when he was referring to the fact that you were being reinstated as parliamentary secretary, where he said, to add insult to injury, public monies are being expended to provide a job to a repentant and contrite backbencher in the Ministry of Tourism when the country is being shut to the main tourist market. If he had said that to your face, if you were having a one-on-one, what would be your response to the senator?
Well, my response was simply being to him, you know, respectfully, sir, I hear you and I understand the direction or the point of view you're coming from. However, as a young man who have studied tourism and hospitality at the University of the Bahamas, mm-hmm. and in this most troubling time where our tourism industry is on its knees, I believe this time more than ever before is the time that tourism and the senior leadership needs every input at the senior team from the young, the middle, and the more experienced individual mm-hmm. to put together a recovery a plan mm-hmm. that is not just reflective of a particular age of doing things, mm-hmm. but my voice and my input as a young man and mm-hmm. as a young person and a millennial in this country
That's right.
will add balance to the recovery plan mm-hmm. that we see for our country. And so it is not merely to be looked at as putting an individual back in a time of turmoil, et cetera. No, mm-hmm. because when you see turmoil in the Chinese language, when you see crisis, mm-hmm. they see opportunity.
That's
so
correct.
The crisis he spoke about was the perfect opportunity mm-hmm. to have all voices and different perspectives at the table. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's what the Prime Minister saw. An mm-hmm. opportunity to have all voices and generations at the table mm-hmm. so that our master tourism plan is one that is reflective that all generation of Bahamians can get behind.
And we're going to be talking more about this tourism plan to which you refer on the other side of this break. For those of you just probably tuning in, you're listening into Influencers here on Guardian Talk Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Lady Shima. In with me today, influencer, Mr. Travis Robinson, Parliamentary Secretary for the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism and Aviation, and of course, the MP for the Bain and Grandstand constituency. On the topic, the Bahamas, a nation in recovery mode, and we're going to be getting more into the topic on the other side. Please stay tuned.
There's this place you can buy quality men and ladies fragrances like Versace and Jimmy Choo for the best prices in town. It's easy to find with lots of parking and great customer service too. Want to know where? I'm talking about Sawyer's Treasures and Things, located right next to Sawyer Studios in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 to 5. Call them now at 361-7299. Got it? Sawyer's Treasures and Things at 361-7299.
Start your day the right way with 7Cs.
Start your day the right way. Trust in the timeless tradition of 7Cs cod liver oil. 7Cs cod liver oil is a rich natural source of omega-3, giving you the essential nutrients needed to promote good health and help make sure you're looking and feeling your very best. Whether it's one a day, high strength, or traditional, with 7Cs cod liver oil, you start your day the right way.
Start your day the right way with 7Cs.
ACG Wholesale is the answer for retail grocery store owners and everyday shoppers who want to save big. ACG carries a variety of drinks, snacks, meat products, essential dry goods like rice and yellow grits, plus lots of wholesome produce. And ACG Wholesale is a proud distributor of Borden's Milk, opened Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., located next to Phoenix Supermarkets on East Street South. Call 392-1155. That's ACG Wholesale with quality service and great prices.
Welcome back to Influencers. I'm your host, Lady Shima, and with me today is influencer Travis Robinson, and he is, of course, the Parliamentary Secretary for the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism and Aviation. And our topic for today is the Bahamas, a nation in recovery mode. And right before we went to break, you were talking about this recovery plan as it relates to tourism. Of course, I was participating in a Bahama host session just this morning, and a lot of the participants were talking about really just seeing downtown just looking like a ghost town and how heartbroken they are by, you know, just witnessing this. First account eyewitnesses seeing this. And for some of them, is the first time in their lifetime that they've ever seen such a thing. Talk a bit about some of the plans that your government has in bringing about this rebound, this recovery, this comeback of our number one industry, tourism.
Well, first of all, you know, we're still inside the middle of the, in the surge of the pandemic, even particularly now in what we call the third wave. Mm-hmm. But what we've been focusing on is brand familiarity, right? A number of, particularly in the U.S. market, because we know and we appreciate over 90% of our visitors to the Bahamas is from the U.S. market, right? And so, focusing on brand familiarity, reconnecting with all of our travel agents, all of our promotional companies to, you know, remind them of how, you know, committed tourism in the Bahamas has been to them and the need for them to partner with us to get the Bahamas brand back out there in front of visitors alike. Mm-hmm. But what more specifically we've been selling is the family islands. Mm-hmm. And that is because, you know, when you look at this pandemic, a lot of persons and visitors are preferring destinations that are less densely populated.
That's correct.
And countries and destinations that are strict and really focusing on their COVID protocols. Mm-hmm. And so our efforts in focusing on the family islands are bearing fruit. Mm-hmm. And we see it in our numbers because in 2019, where we had the banner year, where we broke the record with 7.2 million visitors to our shore, you know, the largest in the history of the Bahamas.
That's right.
Tourists coming to the Bahamas was about 75 to 80% coming to Nassau, New Providence, and about 20% going throughout the remaining family islands.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Today in 2021, when we look at the numbers, there's about 60%, 55 to 60% of the tourists coming to Nassau, and a whopping 40% going to the family
islands. That's almost straight down the middle.
Yeah. And so when we look at the numbers, it's a direct reflection of our marketing advertisement, which was sell the family islands, less densely populated, a less COVID risk environment.
Yes.
We had islands in the Bahamas that had zero COVID numbers.
That's right.
Right? So instead of selling, yes, Nassau and Grand Bahama, you know, had the skyrocketed numbers. But at the time, you had the Eleutheras, the Long Islands, the Exomas, et cetera, with one and two and three cases.
Yes.
You know, so so when our travel agents sold that to tourists abroad, individuals looking to go on vacation, Eleuthera is busting through its sails.
It was an easy sell,
you know? And so even now we're about to invest another $400,000 into Eleuthera to build a temporary airport terminal until the main airport takes break ground and begin construction because Eleuthera is busting through its seams.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. So the marketing has the marketing approach has been a very cautious one because even if you look at November 1st, 2020, when tourism in the Bahamas, when we had the grand launch of the Bahamas is open for business back in November 1st, 2020, one of the flack we got at the time during November 1st of 2020 was that the Bahamians were not seeing, in their view, enough marketing and promotion of the Bahamas, et cetera, out there.
Yes.
But in reality, research will show you one of the more specific things that we were not paying attention to, those who are not in the market and industry, was that November 2020 was the U.S. general election, right? President Joe Biden and Donald Trump.
Exactly, yes.
And every television and radio ad had bought out every, you know, ad.
The focus was on the U.S. election.
And so the price that you paid at the time for one ad.
I'm sure.
It was our whole budget.
Yes.
You know, for marketing. So it didn't make sense. So
we
could not compete with the U.S. general election at the time.
Okay.
So the strategy had to switch again.
Mm-hmm.
We put a lot of little soft things out there just to keep our name buzzing.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately following the results, the confirmation of the results of the U.S. election, then we went full force with all of the marketing agencies and the different promotion and partnering with the Bahama and Atlantis, et cetera, to further promote the Bahamas.
Definitely, you know, really reaping rewards now, looking at some of the comments by, you know, the Minister of Tourism, Dionisio de Aguila, with his 2021-2022 budget debate comments. And he said here that the visa request, the travel health visa request, went from 22,000 in January to 30,000 in February to 64,000 in March to 68,000 in April and then 110,000 in May. So we see a marked increase there. And so far in 2021, still quoting from the minister, almost 300,000 visitors have returned to our shores here in the Bahamas. And also, of course, he quoted those percentages that you just made reference to as well. 60% here to New Providence in terms of visitor arrivals and 40% going to the family islands. And so, of course, this is a confirmation here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it should be like a pat on the back to say, hey, Ministry of Tourism, we are on the right path. We're doing something right. We're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what that experience is like, sitting around the table, being a part of the think tank, the brainstorming session. What's that like? What happens?
Yeah. Well, it's a very it's very interesting moment because you have some of the most experienced individuals with years and years inside the sector at this round table, and we're going back and forth on the direction that tourism should be going in. Individuals, executive directors reporting on their departments and their portfolios that fall under them, and being pulled apart from other departments on what it really should look like and the different direction and what we should be doing and what we need to do more of.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing we're always guided by is the numbers, you know, because you could always come up with a brilliant idea, but the numbers, more so than the money, the numbers need to support, and statistics need to support the direction that you're going into. For example, you know, some 90% of visitors to the Bahamas is coming from America. Right. So that percentage direct our investment in terms of marketing, rather investing $100 million in China or some other country. We cannot forget where the bread and butter is really coming from.
That's right.
And and we cannot take for granted, you know, just like Coca-Cola and all of them. Everybody know what is Coca-Cola, but every Super Bowl or different commercial, you will see a Coca-Cola or some other commercial brand that you already know. And so we cannot take for granted where your bread and butter is coming from and the need to market into the destination. Yes, where you have a strong grip on, but not allowing that to fall away. But the Bahamas has done great, because we have been the only country in the Caribbean to have survived off of tourism for more than 60 golden years, right? Tourism has been the bloodline. And yes, I appreciate the conversation that talks about whether or not we should diversify our economy, and the list goes on and all of that good stuff. But the truth of the matter is, when you look at what is the number one revenue generation around the world, it is service-based industries. Tourism is a service-based industry, right? And in marketing, it would tell you, you know, we have in the Bahamas the competitive advantage over a plethora of other destinations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so to go from something you're a master at to divert into something that you're trying to learn would be, you know, a black eye to your economy in its entirety.
What do you think about doing both simultaneously?
I think the simultaneous approach should come from us as a Bahamian people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the government has been trying to do that when we look at the institution of the Small Business Development Center, where local Bahamians can go and get grants, et cetera, to start up a business, further promote your business, inventory, et cetera.
Yes.
The government is not saying that tourism should be the end all and the be all.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're saying is that we are the master at this.
Mm-hmm.
We understand this. We didn't figure this thing out overnight. It took some 60 years for us to be able to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I often tell people as well, when you look at other industries, let's say manufacturing or agriculture, as a lot of people like to say, should be our number one industry.
Agriculture and fisheries, yes.
When you look at that, right, in this pandemic, let's say, take for example, Hurricane Dorian. That just took place, right? That would have wiped out the entire economy of the Bahamas had agriculture been our number one industry, particularly on the family islands, right? And not to say we should not dwell in it, but we have to be careful for what we ask for. Like the saying goes, you know, look what you can get when you're tired of what you got.
Yeah.
And
the Bahamian saying.
Yeah, I think tourism will never die, in my view, as a young millennial who have studied tourism inside and out, and now doing a master's in tourism and aviation.
Wow, great.
Tourism will never die simply because as teaching is the career that makes all other careers possible, tourism is the industry by which every other industry transit.
Wow. Say that again. I love that.
Right.
As teaching is the career.
Teaching is the career that makes all other careers possible. Tourism is the industry by which all other industries transit.
You mind if I borrow that sometime in the future?
You can. You can. Please
I really
do.
Love that. That's an awesome one. And talking about that and talking about, you know, tourism making a comeback. And, you know, it being easier for tourism to get up on its feet again.
Yeah.
All right. The Crystal Cruises, July 2021, making its inaugural voyage. And such a time of excitement, such a time of spontaneity, even for those persons who were so excited about servicing those tourists who were arriving on, you know, on their shores after such a long time of not seeing one tourist dock in the doors of the airport. You know, I could only imagine what that feeling must have been like.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was a thrill. Even for us, you know, our tourism, it was, oh my God, long overwaiting. And it was a lot of work that went in the background to make this possible. But this has always been home porting in the Bahamas for the cruise ship.
Yes.
Has always been a dream of the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And crazy enough, we were laying the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Now you would go downtown, you see the new cruise terminal being built.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be world class. That we were laying the foundation prior to COVID to venture into home porting. But COVID had another idea.
Yes, it certainly
COVID
did.
COVID came and catapulted or fast-tracked that idea.
It did.
And allowed home porting in the Bahamas to become a reality much sooner than we ever anticipated. Obviously, in connection to the policies that the CDC in America, Center for Disease Control, had put out, which was a no cruise, no sailing order.
Mm-hmm.
So cruise ships could not leave America under any, you know,
circumstances.
And so, hey, the Bahamas jumping there. Guess what?
Hey.
We have 16 major inhabited family islands
that are unique and different. That's right.
You know, you may not could sail from America, but this is a sovereign territory. You could come here. You could start in New Providence, go to Eleuthera, go to Long Island, et cetera. And so that's how that really came about. So we have on the weekends, 1,600 tourists fly in every weekend to board those ships, Crystal Cruise, Carnival Cruise, at downtown Nassau, and sail throughout the islands of the Bahamas, disembark those ships, stay in our hotels, ride in our taxis, eat in our restaurants, etc., and pump the money, the American dollar, into our local economy.
That's the multiplication effect.
Yes.
And we're totally loving it. And, you know, talking about the multiplication effect, in this Bahama host session experience this morning too as well, and we're going to talk more about that because we just had about 760 graduates just the other day. Absolutely phenomenal.
Yes.
But one of the participants said something very, very interesting, and it really stuck. And he said he loves what the government is doing with the recovery efforts when it comes to our number one industry. However, the downfall that really sticks out for him, especially with having family who worked in the straw market, he thought that maybe it should have been opened and that you should have, you know, your safety protocols and probably do like a rotation system and have it set up where you would have your social distancing and all of that adhered to, and still have it open, just like how we have other services that are open to render to the guests and to our tourists as they come and visit the Bahamas. What do you have to say about that, with so many being impacted with the closure of the straw market for such a very long period of time? And that, too, also being a very integral part of what is authentically Bahamian and what it is that we have to offer, especially when it comes to our art and craft.
Yeah, so I understand and I hear the concern, and it is a valued one. Mm-hmm. I think more often than just the dollar value, we have to ultimately in this day and time appreciate the health value, because we could be wanting to be all things to everyone and then become nothing to anyone. And I say that by saying we have straw vendors, etc., have an obligation to themselves to ensure that they operate within the highest degree of health, safety, and protocols. When the straw market was built, the structure and dimension of the straw market was never built to accommodate social distancing and or the air ventilation that is currently needed in this COVID environment.
So it's just straight up unsafe to reopen.
It is unsafe, particularly. I could really support that cry or that concern. Had all straw vendors been fully vaccinated, I could support that. And I say that on the premise.
Even with them being on a rotation system?
Well, see, with the rotation system, it's easy. We have to appreciate our culture as well. You know, we can say rotation system, right? But it then comes down to enforcement. It comes down to, we know ourselves, we know our people, and we have to be realistic in this day and time. You know, the worst thing you want to do is to open a facility where tourists now, where it become an incubation for tourists to contract, or even Bahamians more so, to contract COVID from one another, right? So if anyone knows of how the straw market is constructed, and even how the stalls are constructed, social distancing is very, very, very difficult.
It's going to be very challenging.
To really execute. And, you know, the entrance and exit, there's not one controlled entrance or exit for that. And even if you try to do one controlled exit and entrance, then you come back down to the air ventilation issue, right? Because you could roll down the shutters and have one entrance and one exit, then you get into the COVID protocol. You roll up the shutters and then you have the issue of enforcement and all of that stuff. So
they're going to have to wait until the pandemic is, what, near over in order for it to be reopened?
No, I think what it is that I think as we see more and more of the Bahamian populace, as we're seeing now, become fully vaccinated,
okay,
and we can reach the point where the government can see that we are be comfortable that we are not creating for ourselves, you know, a COVID incubation. I think they will have that opportunity to get back out there and get to work. But what is important at this day and time, I think, is for them to still be entrepreneurs in their own right. I think there are other places downtown that they may be able to to partner with. I'm not certain what the Tourism Development Corporation is doing. I know that's an entity with Janet Johnson who work with straw vendors and different people alike to get them placed on, it could be some of the beaches in New Providence, different locations where that tourists frequent, like the monuments, etc., that they could be a part of. Okay. But I think the number one priority, as the Prime Minister always say, is to save lives.
Good closing point there. And I just really wanted to speak to that because there was such a cry, you know, during that session this morning. And I really, really felt that, especially with so many of them being related to persons who work directly within the straw market. So I wanted to hear from the PolSec on that for sure. But with that said, of course, training is an integral part of the success of the tourism industry. Because when we have those guest-facing professionals who are out there, we need to make sure that they are putting a good face on for the Bahamas, that they are representing our country well. And with that said, I believe it's an awesome success of a story with 760 graduates just a few weeks ago from six different islands, graduating, now being Bahama Host certified. What are your thoughts and ideas and feelings about the whole Bahama Host thrust and purpose and function within the Ministry of Tourism?
I think the Bahama Host for me is the very epitome or the embodiment of what we say when we say tourism is everybody's business.
That's correct, yes.
And the Bahama Host helped to make that slogan possible. You have police officers, defense force officers, customs, immigration, taxi, straw vendors, the likes, people from all walks of life, even nurses and doctors, etc., who enroll themselves in the Bahama Host program. And the Bahama Host program is one that explores and delves deep into what tourism is and what it and what role you play and from whence we have come to where we are now and how we can all play a role in taking the country and tourism forward. And so the program, it's a stellar one. It cannot go anywhere, anytime soon. And the program is like the diamond, the jewel.
It really is.
Of the heartbeat of the of tourism and what we do. Because even just one session, one enrollment in Bahama Host could change your perspective on how important
it
tourism
totally
is
That's
to
correct.
This country. And I'm sure in your role and other persons who would have taught a class or work with them, you hear the feedback, the comments. I didn't know tourism was so involved.
So much of that. That's
Et cetera. And that is what Bahama Host does, ensuring that everybody understands in this country, tourism is everybody's business.
That's right.
44% of our gross domestic product, our GDP, is the tourism industry. 70% of the employment force indirectly and indirectly linked to the tourism industry.
That's correct.
You know, I hear people, oh, well, I'm a mechanic. I don't work in tourism. I don't have to work for tourism. Yeah, but we have Leisure Tour, Majestic Tours. When their bus broke down, they go to you.
Exactly.
That's tourism dollars they pay you with. You know, oh, I'm a cook. I mean, come on. We have chefs all there. Oh, I'm a banker. We have a whole accounts department in tourism, in the hotel industry.
That's
I'm a lawyer. We have our legal tourism. We have a whole lawyer in tourism. We have, you know, every career
Everyone's impacted.
Possible.
Yes.
You know, you can find in tourism. Tourism is the industry by which all other industries transit. You know, whether you are, you know, obviously a teacher, teach about it, right? Whether you're a teacher, a lawyer, a doctor, et cetera, whether you are just a mason, right? Again, it comes back down to architect. All these hotels and things being built, that's tourism dollars.
That's right.
When you jump on a plane, that's tourism.
That's right.
When you, most times, you know, a lot of persons talk about, you know, their career and what they do and saying, and talk about, oh, I've never been in a hotel and I don't go downtown and all that. And they come up with all the strange illusions that they can say. But no, when you jump on the plane and you go in on vacation, you are participating in tourism, right? Because you can jump on a plane, stay in a hotel, rent a car. And it is all the multiplier effect, and you cannot run away from it. And that's why I always say tourism will never die.
As we wrap up our conversation today on the topic, the Bahamas, a nation in recovery mode, of course, the Prime Minister, the Right Honorable Hubert Minnis, has really been pushing the vaccination thrust, right? He's, you know, get that jab, get that jab, get that jab. And of course, lots of conversations, a lot of skepticism as it relates to the only one that was in country at the time, AstraZeneca, and for a very long time. And as of Monday coming, that is per the time of the recording of the show, you're now going to have your Pfizer, and I believe J&J will eventually join in with the Pfizer and through the Caribbean Public Health Agency, and that partnership there, 128,700 doses of Pfizer. And, you know, air to the ground and hearing person saying, listen, now that we have some options, now we're probably going to go and take the jab. So it sounds like you're moving closer and closer to this herd immunity that's trying to be achieved here in the Bahamas so that we can get back to some degree of normalcy. It took a while, but there's still a huge degree of skepticism. There's still a huge degree of fear as it relates to the whole vaccination process. As we close and talking about needing to recover as a people and as a nation, what are your thoughts and what would you like to say to the Bahamian people as it relates to the whole topic of vaccination?
Well, you know, I'm no doctor, I'm no scientist, but I would only say, you know, our recovery is in our hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is ours to lose or to win.
Mm-hmm.
We have the vaccines in country. A lot of persons, as you mentioned, have been talking about, you know, one not wanting the AstraZeneca and wanting to have more options. That is now available to us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I hear all the comments as well. You know, why take the vaccine? You still could catch COVID. It's the same way you put on a seatbelt and still could die in a car crash, right? It's the same way you take birth control and still can get pregnant. These are not to prevent you from catching it, but it is to support you and help your immune system mm-hmm. in terms of the vaccines if you were to catch it,
mm-hmm.
right, that you don't end up hospitalized. And I would only tell someone, you know, go down to PMH. Just drive past PMH
yes.
one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
See the lines. Look at the videos going around of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
The
beyond capacity.
It's beyond capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And our healthcare system was not designed
mm-hmm.
to take on this level of load.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear
That's
a lot
true.
Of people, oh, the government need to do better. And I'm not just talking about this government, but any government. Government's obsessed with governments about the hospital and its, you know, its capacity. We should have had more beds than that. And the list goes on. That's not, I think that's retroactive in our thinking.
Mm.
Our thinking should be, how do we create a healthier society
mm.
so that we don't have to build multifaceted, giant, overload buildings of hospitals? That's not, government should be forward-looking.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make healthy eating and different products available to your people
mm-hmm.
to avoid them from having to be crowded in large hospitals, etc.? That's not what the government job is. You have to be progressive in your thinking, in your administration, in your decision making, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So my only point is save yourself,
mm-hmm.
protect yourself. And I'm not here to, you know, force anybody or tell them, you know, you must take the vaccine. No, that's your right,
mm-hmm.
you know, but respectfully, I think we owe an obligation as citizens, not just to ourselves, but to our family members, to the people around us, to our country, to our society,
mm-hmm.
to ensure that we do what's in the best interest of us. And we do the right thing. Whether the right thing is not taking the vaccine, but for God's sake, keep yourself sanitized. Wear your mask. Social distance.
At least
right?
the basic
At
safety
least.
Protocols.
You
yes.
know?
Yes.
And if you take the vaccine, then good. Still follow the protocols. Because
mm-hmm.
we need, as more and more people take the vaccine, we can open the country more. The economy can get back on its feet. Tourists who are our bread and butter will feel more comfortable coming back here knowing that the Bahamas is the first country in the Caribbean that have herd immunity. Man, listen. Tourism could go to town on that type of promotion.
It certainly could.
Yeah.
And I believe that the word that you shared just now is probably having persons to take a second look. Yeah. Lots of talk, lots of deep thought. It's a serious decision that one would have to make.
Yes.
But thank you so very much for your time, Parliamentary
you.
Secretary, the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism and Aviation, the inspirational Member of Parliament for the Bain and Grandstown constituency, the one and only Mr. Travis Robinson. Blessings, everyone.
Influencers was brought to you by
7Seas. Start your day the right way. Soya Studios, located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road West. ACG Wholesale, with quality service and great prices. The Beauty Barn, hair and beauty supplies, delivering beauty products straight to your door. WhatsApp 242-812-8500. Real Time Sound Studios and Global Transformation Media, transforming you from the inside out.